I would like, if I may, to take you on a strange journey.
To explore strange new worlds. To seek out new life and new civilizations. To boldly go where no man has gone before.
Fangirl Radio.
Mothers, lock up your sons. The fangirls are busting out all over. It's Fangirl Radio.
Fangirl Radio.
Here's the fangirls on Jackalope Radio.
Hey, everybody, and welcome to this very romantic episode of the Fangirl Radio Show. I am your host, Jessica Dwyer, and we have a special guest fanboy tonight, as it's only fair that if we're going to do a special Valentine's episode that we allow both sides of the coin to have their say on what they think is romantic in our own special ways. And so we are going to have Jeremaro on tonight with us later to talk about what he considers some of the romantic ideals in the geekdom of his life. And we are also, Ren and I will also be talking about what we consider romantic in the world of fiction and film and television as it is, which may not jones with the norm. And that's fine because we're not normal and we're happily not normal on this show.
True.
So, yes, Ren is with me tonight. Say hi, Ren.
Hi.
So, before we get into that, we have a lot of Week in Geek to talk about. And I actually wanted to go over a couple of my Oscar picks because we really haven't talked about the Oscars. But I actually have managed to see some stuff that has been nominated, not just Frankenweenie, which I think, of course, needs to win Best Animated Film. Screw you, the Brave. Screw the Brave. Sorry.
But it's called Brave, right?
No, it's not. It's called Screw the Brave. In my head. So before we get into those, I had to talk about Walking Dead, that came back this weekend swinging a mighty sword of awesome ratings. It had a 12.3 million viewers.
Whoa.
Which broke some major records. And what was so awesome about it is something that Yahoo pointed out was it was up against the Grammys and won mightily.
As soon as they said LL Cool J was hosting the Grammys, I thought, do these people seriously think that it is 1998?
Like, I don't know, man. I don't know what was going on. Yeah, it's just strange. But The Walking Dead, I wrote a review that I posted up. And apparently, yay, you actually got to see it too.
Yes, well, that was supposed to be a secret note between you and me, but fine, yeah, I saw it.
I didn't say anything about the note. Usually you haven't seen it yet, so I'm always feeling bad and have you cover your ears when I start talking about it.
I watched it.
I loved it. And the big thing that I took from it and I liked about it, and I pointed this out in my review, was I love the fact that the big badass of the show, who is Daryl Dixon, is pointed out by Carol to be a victim of abuse. And I think that was awesome.
That was intriguing because, I mean, as soon as she said it, the dots connected immediately. And I said, oh, my God, she is totally right. But I had never thought of it until that moment.
Well, when Norman was on our show, he talked about how he wanted Daryl to be kind of like the cornered animal type because he's had to deal with alcoholism all his life in the form of his brother and all these outrages. But it never really came home on the show unless you knew to look for that stuff until she stated that. And you see him, you see, because this is all how awesome Norman Reedus is. You see him acting like a cornered animal when they're in the middle of that screaming match in the death pit of Woodbury, and he's sort of breathing heavily. He's looking around. He's skittish. He's scared. And
but Jay, that's not allegory. He's in the middle of a murderous mob.
I know. But this is a guy that, cold-hearted as he could be, like steel, was taking down a bunch of dead body, you know, like zombies, surrounded by them. Basically, he has the phrase. He actually says this is a good day as any. About to, you know, saying it to die, but right. You see in the middle of this, next to Merle, with his brother, you see that happen, and it's so weird and awesome at the same time for Reedus to pull that, because this is a guy who's a stone cold killer to everybody we see. There's no fear with Daryl Dixon.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he rides the loudest vehicle you can when you shouldn't be making noise.
I took out of that scene was that, I mean, this was a really bizarre moment to watch Daryl kind of, you know, shifting weight on his feet and not completely cool, calm, and collected. I gathered that it was had nothing to do with the murderous mob streaming, you know, screaming, kill them around him. Had everything to do with the fact that his brother was being told to kill him. I mean, well, okay, anybody being told to kill you make you nervous, but he was face to face with his brother in a combative environment, and that scared crap out of him.
Yeah, and he knew how much of a badass his brother was.
Probably remembered every other time his brother's kicked his ass. So
I think that scene is great. And then Carol stating that and saying that, you know, big badass Daryl Dixon still is afraid of his brother. Mm-hmm. And it's from years of having that drilled into his head that he's not worth it. You know, he tells Rick, Carol will understand, mm-hmm. but at the same time, Carol had hoped that you can tell she'd hoped he'd broken free from it just like she had.
Mm-hmm. Well, because, but even she made the statement. She said, I'd like to believe that if Ed, her abusive ex-husband, walked through this door and told us to go, I'd like to believe that I'd tell him to go to hell. But of course, the unspoken statement was, I don't know if I could.
Yeah, and I love that. I love that, you know, people kind of give Carol a bad way about, you know, I don't like Carol. Like, no, I actually really
love
like
Carol.
I love Carol, and it seems like that I really love, because you know that she and Reedus have worked together on that relationship and those characters, and they wonder why the two of them kind of mesh so well, and that's why. They on that level, and I really love that. I loved and now here's something that I found interesting. Like, I was reading some other takes on the episode, and someone was stating that they think that the governor and Andrea are going to be a polar leaders in Woodbury. Like, Andrea's trying to take control from the governor. That's not what I took from that episode. What I took from that episode is that he knows how to play her like a fiddle. And he had her, basically he's telling her, you know, it's over, it's done. You know, you're a stranger here. What do you care? Kind of thing. And he knew that, you know, what she's looking for is a place of safety. And he is somewhere like a family unit. And he gave her the way to do that, and basically, like, maneuvered her into becoming part of Woodbury and being a centerpiece of sort of his co-leader.
Yeah, that was very clever.
It was, and also he lost Merle, but he knows that she's a badass because she survived. She's out there blowing away these, you know, she's wanting to be part of the security and all that. He sees in her a good fit for that position, and so that's what he did. And that's,
but he has to manipulate her into it, though, because Merle was easy. Merle had no
he
was morally gray. He could do whatever the governor asked him to.
Right.
She's not quite so morally gray, so he's gonna have to manipulate her into a feeling of that the entire city is relying on her, and that if she doesn't do these things, you know, these slightly dirty things that the governor's going to ask her to do, then it's the people who will suffer. And he knows she'll fall for that.
I think, too, that it's going to be, you know, that's the game he's playing with her, and he's trying to corrupt her and manipulate her into being that. And, you know, Andrea is without any other people now. That's all she's got. You know, Rick and company left her behind.
Did they see her, though? I can't remember.
Yeah, she was right there next to Daryl screaming. They knew that she was there. And that's when, you know, they told her, they knew that she was there. And when Rick was told by Merle, you know, they found out after the fact. They could have went back and got her, but he's basically, you know, she was knocking boots with the governor. She's all cuddled up with him, cousin, you know. Merle with his great way of delivery. But yeah, that was, you know, that's it. They basically have seen it that Andrea's made her choice. So has Michonne has decided that too. You know, that she's made her choice. She's with the governor. And that's going to be interesting to see how that plays out with her character too. So, but yeah. And then of course, you know, we need to move on to the rest of the Week in Geek, but the ending, I love the fact that they really did get Sarah Wayne Callis to come back and be the ghost of Lori.
I was thinking to myself, I was like, that silhouette, whoever they got to be Lori in that silhouette looks exactly like Lori.
They brought her back.
I didn't realize it was her.
It was her, and I thought it was great, you know, because Lori was looking rough, as is everybody on the show, and they were able to make her look ethereally beautiful. Even that little bit of silhouette you got, she's actually able to wear makeup now, which she never was on the show before.
Why did they do that, though? I mean, I'm happy with this whole Rick going insane storyline. I mean,
it happens in the comics.
Silk gown.
No, well, in the comics, he loses the comic. No, that's part of the arc of that character. It's very important for that to happen, because what happens because of that and all the things that happened in the prison after the fact, he has to go through this. And the reason I found out online, the reason she was in the white dress is that was actually her wedding gown kind of thing. And Rick sees her in one of the happiest moments of his life kind of a deal inside of his head, and it just jacks with him.
And I get that, but I come back. This is the same thing I've said before last time we talked about The Walking Dead. I don't want to have to reveal that particular element of the plot by looking online. It should have been evident to me the connection, the emotional connection to what Rick was seeing and why it invoked that emotional reaction. It totally wasn't. All I saw was, oh, look, it's Lori, but why the hell is she wearing a silk dress? It doesn't make any sense.
I didn't even put that much thought into it. Someone had stated that online. I took from it that she was supposed to look angelic and ethereally beautiful, you know, diaphanous gown, look otherworldly because she's moved on to another place. You know, she's an angel. And it throws him crazy. You know.
Right, but emotionally, I don't think him seeing her in another place, in a better place, would have evoked that kind of hysteria. Seeing her in a memory, kind of, the way you just described, like the happiest times of his life, that evokes a sense of loss. That would have made more emotional impact to me watching it. And I'm just still frustrated that whoever is there's just like that one little extra step that The Walking Dead just hasn't been able to make for me in a couple of episodes lately, where, like, if you analyze it with extra information from the comics, it's awesome, but they're just not getting there in the show for me.
Well, in the comics, he just goes crazy. I mean, there's different scenes of the crazy in the comic books, but he does lose his mind, and that's a big deal. And it affects everybody, and we're certain.
So in the comics, she wasn't wearing the wedding dress? So where did that piece of information come from?
Somebody online said that's what that was supposed to represent.
Oh, but how do we're trusting somebody online now?
Yeah, I'm saying okay. I'm, and it's you know that works.
You know me, I don't trust unverified sources of data.
But anyway, The Walking Dead, I was very happy with the episode. I thought it was great. So we got to move on to what did you have for Week in Geek?
Well, I thought this sort of, in a roundabout way, fit for the topic of our show, because nothing has proved to be more romantic in all of the things that you think of that bring people together than impending doom.
Well,
and in this case, it comes in the form of a gigantic asteroid that's going to pass very, very, very close to the Earth, which I find incredibly exciting, and if you think about it in really, really broad terms, a little bit scary. So this asteroid is going to pass by the Earth on February 15th, which will be the day after the show airs. Unfortunately, it's going to pass by kind of the southern hemisphere on the opposite side of us, so it's going to be kind of hard for us to see. Plus, it'll be daylight on this side of the Earth. It'll be way easier for people in Asia and Australia and Eastern Europe to see this thing. This is how close it's passing. This is kind of creeped me out, because they said it's going to pass uber close. So I thought, oh, wow, it'll be maybe between Earth and the moon. It'll be that close. But no. It is passing so close, it will be under the orbit of a lot of our satellites. The satellites that do, like, cell phone stuff and cable news and things.
Oh,
under
God.
That orbit. So 17,000 miles is how close it's going to pass.
How most big of an asteroid is it?
Half the size of a football field. If it had hit us, this thing, if this had going to be on a collision course, it would have landed with about 180 times the power of the Hiroshima nuclear bomb.
Oh,
that is
God.
How the damage that this little guy can do. It's the size, about 40 meters in diameter, and it's really close. So yeah.
Well,
it's an S-type asteroid, which means it's silicates, which is pretty much just that it's made of rock, which is boring. But the exciting part of this is, you know, if we're able to chart these things well enough in advance and find out that it's made of something more interesting than silicates or some silicate minerals that we find interesting, the idea, there's a lot of these companies out there that are talking about asteroid mining. So you would find some way to rope one of those bad boys and put it in an orbit. Instead of letting it just pass by on its way, find some way to put it in an orbit and then mine it. It's really kind of exciting when you think of it that way. On the broader terms, though, the reason why it scares me is because I think back to a lot of the stuff that I read from Carl Sagan. It was one of the big things that Sagan was always talking about, how about he had total faith that the human race would progress to fabulous things, you know, beyond our petty squabbles on the Earth and join together as a race to do amazing things out in our own solar system and beyond, if we get the chance. Because chances are we're going to get smacked by something. Because we only see about 10% of the near-Earth bodies as it is. We're not even aware of the rest of the stuff swirling around. If we get smacked by something and wiped out before we even get that chance, it would be tragic. So anyway.
That's why we have Bruce Willis.
No,
yes,
we really
Armageddon.
Need to, you know, in all nerdy honestness, we need to devote some you know, resources
countermeasures
for collisions, because those happen all over the solar system often.
Just been lucky.
Right. And then when it happens, everyone will fall in love with each other because impending doom brings you together. Oh.
Isn't that Steve Carell movie called Looking for a Friend for the End of the World?
Oh, I haven't seen that one. I'll have to rent
it. Oh, God, no, don't do it. It's horribly depressing.
Okay, I won't
see it. It's depressing as hell. Don't do it. I'm just telling you right now, don't. It's not a comedy. It's as much of a comedy as Marley and Me. It's as much of a comedy as Marley and Me is.
Okay, take your word for it.
Thank you for... I love you, Ren, you're funny. I love that is what brings to mind romance for you, is like,
yes,
impending doom. I think that's great.
All the movies I thought of that I consider romantic all involve impending doom, so it works.
That's awesome. Good job. Good tie-in. I like that.
Thank you.
So, impending doom, let's talk about the Oscars really quickly. I'm surprised. I actually got to see Hitchcock. I did, and it is awesome. I totally enjoyed it. And Anthony Hopkins is spot on. Helen Mirren's great. Danny Houston is in it, and he's awesome. Just a great, great movie, beautifully shot, whimsical in one way, twisted and wrong on a lot of other ones. It's perfect. And I was amazed that it didn't get nominated for anything other than, I don't believe, but like makeup and clothing design. So very disappointed with that. But great movie. Get a chance, if you get a chance, see it. I believe it's coming out on DVD very, very soon. For supporting actor, I have to go with Christoph Waltz, just because he basically saved Django. The entire movie of Django Unchained should have been called The Dentist. And he was amazing in it. I'm going with him, even though I got to see Argo as well. Argo needs to win Best Picture.
That's what I hear.
And it's excellent movie. It's a travesty that Ben Affleck did not get nominated for Best Director. I don't understand that
at all.
That's crap. That's right up there with the whole Shakespeare in Love thing. And so what I believe I was talking to my husband, and he calls it. I think this is how it's going to go down. Argo's going to get Best Picture, and they're going to give Best Director to Spielberg for Lincoln. Just as a, you know, we're sorry, but yeah. And I got to see Silver Linings Playbook, and really, really liked it. The ending was sort of off to the tone of the rest of the film, but excellent movie. I really strongly suggest it. It's funnily enough, it fits with our tone of the show. It's not your typical romantic comedy at all. And really good performances by Bradley Cooper and Jennifer Lawrence. I love Jennifer Lawrence in it. She was awesome. She's got my vote now after her stalking of John Stamos at a Hollywood party as well. Also, Bradley Cooper should be nominated. He is nominated. I know Daniel Day-Lewis is going to win, but Bradley Cooper blew me away in this movie, and I love the fact that he's able to show his range. He's done it before in other films, like Senseless? What's it called? I can't believe I forgot the name of the movie. Anyway, he's got great range. He's a super actor, and this really gives him some meat to get into, and great movie. So I really would like him to win Best Actor, but I doubt it's going to happen. So, and once again, Frankenweenie all the way for Best Animated.
Of course.
It's going to go to Pixar, but it should go to Frankenweenie because it's all hand done.
The other noms for feature are Brave, Frankenweenie, Paranorman, Pirates, Band of Misfits, whatever that is, and Wreck-It Ralph.
Dude, you don't know Pirates, Band of Misfits? Everybody's shocked that I'm not rooting for that because David Tennant's in it.
Oh,
and Martin
course.
Freeman, too, I believe.
Wow. It's the only one of the batch which on the Oscar website doesn't have a trailer.
Of course it doesn't, because they don't care. That's British.
Man, I'm terrible. I saw Wreck-It Ralph, but I saw very little else that lit this last year, and I'm ashamed. But everything I know about the way Frankenweenie was made, I would say that should win.
It's so beautifully done, and the detail was crazy. Because I have pictures. I think I posted them up on Fangirl. You can see they had the displays of the maquettes and the set pieces at Comic-Con. And it's crazy. The amount of detail that went into it. And the fact that it's the first time we've ever had an all black and white stop motion animated film. Mm-hmm. Everything was is black and white, so it had to be painted to look like a black and white movie.
Wow, that's so gorgeous.
It's beautiful, beautiful movie, great movie. Kiss my ass, Pixar. Oh yeah. So, Doctor Who, lots of Doctor Who stuff. I have to go through this very quickly. So River Song is joining Captain Jack on Arrow. She is filming right now over there. The Arrow is once again, like I said before, becoming the love boat of geekdom since we don't have Human Target anymore. So yeah, she is. John Barrowman is over there, and I'm horrible tonight. I'm blanking on her name. Oh my God,
River Song.
So,
or the Doctor from ER. I only know her as two things. River Song or the Doctor from ER.
Alex Kingston. How can I keep forgetting her name? Alex Kingston.
The doctor from ER that was dating Goose from Top Gun.
There you go. There you
Nobody's
go.
He's got a name. Nobody has a name.
Everybody is their character, goddamn.
Yes.
So anyway, that's happening. They think that he's going to be playing the original Black Canary, which is awesome. Moving on from that, they just announced today that the 50th anniversary special, that is, we don't still don't know anything about other than it's going to happen for Doctor Who, is going to be broadcast in 3D.
Yay.
And it's going to be aired in theaters in 3D.
Ooh.
Now that, yeah. Now we don't know if that means American audiences are going to get be privy to this, you know, because the BBC loves just denying us anything awesome like that. I hope and pray to God that, and the BBC, that they will show it in American theaters in 3D. I would give my non-existent left ovary for that.
That's not much of a sacrifice, Jay.
I would give my my husband's left nut
there you go.
For that to happen. But I don't know if that will happen or not. We're still, you know, just the fact that they've released that little bit of information, that leads me to think that maybe, being that he's the doctor that everyone attributes to 3D glasses, that a certain number 10 might be in there.
Mm.
Even though no one will be told, can tell anything. Next on that list is the fact that Neil Gaiman has released the name of his next penned episode of Who that he is writing, called The Last Cyberman. And it's got some great guest stars in it, too. The last time Neil Gaiman wrote a Doctor Who episode, he made me bawl for an hour and a half. So I can only... Yeah, he made me bawl. He made me bawl a lot. I still cry.
No, that was a dumb joke. I'm sorry. I'll move on.
Bad, bad joke that we will edit out. and then also in Who News, for those of you who don't know, I am a convert to the cult of Baby Goose. I love Ryan Gosling. Ryan Gosling is awesome. He is not only pretty, he's not only young Hercules, but he's directing his first movie, and it's called How to Catch a Monster. And How to Catch a Monster is going to be a dark fantasy supernatural film, which is not surprising since Baby Goose is apparently a big horror fan. He casts the Doctor as his male lead.
Yay!
Matt Smith is going to be the lead of How to Catch a Monster, the male lead, apparently. I find that funny. Now, if I find out that Gosling is a Whovian, which I'm guessing he probably is if he's casting somebody like Matt Smith, who's fairly... Well, he's not really... He's known to the geeks in America, but he's not like a well-known name to regular American households. So, and before we move on and bring on our guest tonight, real quick, the show that could and will never end, apparently, Supernatural, has been
stuns me
for another season.
Yay! I've never seen a single episode, but I'm now just rooting for it just out of pure amusement.
9 seasons. I think by the time it's over, Jensen Eccles' son is I think he's got a kid. I think it's a boy. He'll probably be graduating college.
Oh, bring him in the show. See, we'll make it like a dynasty of the actors and their children, and so the show will keep going. Because
I think that's hilarious. I love the show. I'm not into it as much as you would think. I haven't had the time to catch up on it because there's so many damn seasons.
I know.
it's ridiculous. But Arrow and Vampire Diaries, also all three of the well-known geek centric shows on the CW have been renewed, and they're all coming back. So Supernatural fans, be happy. You are getting another season of the Winchester.
I'm sure there was much celebrating on Tumblr tonight.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. Oh my god, the Wincest people, I guess that's what it's called. People scare me. But what's ridiculous about that show is apparently they all know about these fandoms out there and these shippers. And the guy that plays Castile is amazing, and his whole life is just quirky and awesome, and he definitely is aware of what's going on, and he sort of like includes in the show. Yes. He sneaks in the subtext apparently, and Rachel, who's not on with us tonight, she's gave me the info on it, and it's hilarious. I'm like, oh my god, this guy's it's great when they just decide to cater to the fans and do just crazy crap like
that.
When
they get to a point where they can, then yeah, it's fantastic.
Oh, totally. Like, yeah. All right. So it is time to bring on our special guest. So, Amanda, let's bring on Jerem Moreau.
I've never been out of the house.
I know.
You're still not out of the house. You're fine.
You're so shy and unassuming, you know. Yeah. You're not a exhibitionist at all.
No.
No, you didn't walk around my hotel room in a bathrobe with a bottle of whiskey in your pocket. No.
No, I walked around your hotel room and the entire hotel.
Yes, exactly. In a bathrobe.
And okay. No one was brave enough to test me.
All right, so everybody, I want you to welcome warmly, cuddly, gropily, our special guest fanboy for the night, Mr. Jerem Moreau. And he is a good friend of mine, and he's also a super talented artist and awesome all around, has a lot of cool stuff in the works. But tonight, he's going to talk to us about what he considers romantic, which may not fall into the norm, but most of what we talk about on this show doesn't. So you're going to fit right in, Jerem. Hi.
Do I have to give a whole monologue here? Do I have to deliver all of those things all at once?
You're the whole package, honey bunny. So there you go.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. So basically, this episode we're on tonight, it's Valentine's Day, and I wanted to give everyone a chance to talk about some of the alternative romantic films that they love and consider, you know, a personification of the emotion. And one that I'll start us off, because the one I really wanted to bring up is still there's a cult following for it, but I don't think a lot of people in the mainstream know, and that is May. It's a wonderful movie, and it's very creepy and very well played by Angela Bettis. It's got Jeremy Sisto in it, James Duvall, who we all love, and he's been on this show. And it's directed by Lucky McKee, and it's sort of an alternative sort of Frankenstein tale mixed with just a really dark and demented teen angst romantic subplot, and just a beautiful film. And the story of just love unreturned, and just the pain of being different, and it really is a beautiful movie. And I don't know, Ren, if you've seen it. Jerem, I think you probably have.
Yeah, I think it's safe to say that she's a little more unique than, well, it's really not the standard romance.
No, not really at all. No. But I really love the fact that, you know, it really is like, it's sort of Frankenstein meets I don't know, it's almost its own genre, and it's a beautiful film. And if you haven't seen it, I really strongly suggest seeing this movie, especially if you're a horror fan, if you just love beautiful cinema and just a great, great movie. And I don't want to give away much of it. It's hard to not to, though, with this movie, because of the ending is probably one of the most sadly beautiful endings of a film in the last few years. It's just really sad and at the same time, really subtly beautiful. So, but yeah, that's one that I definitely choose as an alternative form of a romantic movie, because she does love a guy, but she's really just looking for, she does love a guy, but she kind of is, it's about looking for love and acceptance in general and not being able to find it and finally finding it kind of with yourself.
And going through a lot of people to find that singular love.
And lots of pieces of people.
Trial and error
and kind of sloppy stitching and and scissors. Those are important.
And Argento kind of shows up, so that...
This is true. So, Ren, I'm going to give you the next shot, and then Jerem, I want you to give us one of yours.
Oh, God. Well, see, you've done me a disservice here, because I was just thinking about general romantic things, and I kind of missed the idea that we were doing weird romantic things, so my weird list is short.
That's okay.
My weird and the other did the same list.
That's why you're on. Well, I think we should teach Ren what we consider if she doesn't have a choice.
No,
You can be our guinea pig.
There's one thing I thought of that is a pairing that is close to my heart, that is not a typical romantic. But I was going to save it for later. But okay, I'll go with the first. There's a pairing of two individuals who, it's bizarre because it crosses the line between the characters they play, they do a show where they also play other sub characters, they match in the sub characters too, and then in real life a little bit, and anybody who declares themselves a Boosh fan knows that I'm talking about Vince Noir and Howard Moon, and I don't know if Rachel's not here, so I can't share my love of Vince Noir and Howard Moon with anybody else. I don't know. Jerem, have you watched any Mighty Boosh ever?
Never.
Okay.
I think you would totally dig it.
If you dig weird and you dig art and you dig bizarre comedy, this is like one of the best shows ever made. Vince Noir and Howard Moon are the perfect kind of really twisted, weird, odd couple. And Vince Noir is, glam and mod and brainless. And Howard Moon is trying to be cool, and he just keeps wearing shades of brown corduroy, and anyway, I can't describe it, because there's this awkward love between them that, and they never, neither of them ever describe anything about which way they're sexually oriented, except for that everyone is in love with Howard Moon. Vince Noir. You can't not be. He's perfect and beautiful, and so everybody, including all the men, just fall madly in love with him, and the joke is that Howard Moon is the perfect match, and he just won't admit it. But okay, fine. If there's any Boosh fans out there, you'll know what I'm talking about. It's a match made in heaven. It's love.
You really do need to see this, Jerem.
It's hard to keep up.
It's okay. This is worth it. There's not very many of them, but it's worth it. And the bizarre thing about the Boosh is you'll watch it a few times and you'll go, "What the hell did I just look at?" But the next time you see it, you'll laugh, and you'll go, "Why am I laughing at this?" And then the next time you see it, you're done. You're completely sold. It's the best. You're just like, "Oh my God, I need more Boosh. More Boosh, please."
I think it's safe to say I'll probably laugh the first time.
Okay, good.
All right, Jerem, what's one of yours?
What's one of mine? Let's see. Well, it's actually, my lady introduced me to a show called Peep Show recently. It's a British, it's a BBC flick, or the flick, sorry, TV show. This wine is really strong. I'm not drinking anything. But these two roommates, these guys are the ultimate married couple. And it's lovely and horrifying, and you don't want to watch. It's the worst train wreck ever. But it's intimate in a way that most people are horrified of being with the person they love. Much less the person they just share a flat with. It's amazing.
Emotionally or?
Everything in their lives gets entangled.
Everything in, okay.
All the great stuff and all the really, really bad stuff.
It's fantastic.
Oh, it's British. It's got to be
the
good.
Peep Show.
The Peep Show. Who's in it?
I couldn't tell you. It's no one I knew before.
Okay, I'm going to Google.
No one I recognized.
Do you know, is it on BBC America or?
I know it. I think all of the seasons are streaming on Netflix, which is how we've been watching it.
Oh, cool. All right.
Oh, I knew the title. It's David Mitchell and Robert Webb. I love those guys.
Oh, they're so good.
Because they did the Mitchell and Webb look together.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
That's how I knew those names.
They are good. They are good people.
And then before we move on, there's a love affair. It's probably the purest love affair I've ever seen, ever, filmically. It's wonderful. It's beautiful. It beats out every Victorian text ever. And it's between a man and a refrigerator in a movie called Wet Hot American Summer. It's amazing.
And that is streaming on Netflix, or it was. I remember that.
Do yourselves a favor. You have to see it.
A man and a refrigerator.
It sounds good. I mean,
hey, screw taboos.
The title alone.
That's awesome.
I accept it all.
You take it all. Take it all. And you do take it all.
That's an interesting phrasing there.
I know. Thank you. I try. Moving on to another one that I think a lot of people don't realize how much of a weird romance it is a movie called Fade to Black, which is one of my all-time favorite 80s horror films. And it stars Tim Thomerson's in it. It's got Dennis Christopher, who a lot of people just remember from either a movie called It, or they've seen him in Circuitry Man or another movie called Breaking Away. And he plays Eric Benford, who is one of my first fake boyfriends ever. I had a couple. And it's a great flick. He's awesome in it. He plays a very effed up movie fan who works in Hollywood and ends up becoming a killer and taking out all of his enemies. And one of them was played by Mickey Rourke. I think it's like one of his first movies he was ever in. And he is in love madly with Marilyn Monroe and the ideal of Marilyn. And just what she personifies to him, which is away from this ugliness that is his life, and just, you know, she's the movie star. And he finds a lookalike and winds up basically, it turns into sort of a King Kong-esque type of thing. And he drugs her up and makes her really think she's Marilyn, and she actually cares about him. And it's just so... you're rooting for this guy, even though he's turned into a psychopath, and you feel for him. And I just love that relationship that he has with Marilyn. It's sort of like the nth degree of a fanboy taking it to the extreme, but at the same time, you feel empathy for him. And I really, really love this movie. And it is someone taking their love of film way too far, but it's just great. I love this movie. And so if you've never seen it, it is available on DVD, but it's very hard to find. But it's called Fade to Black, and you should watch it. I truly believe.
You're a staggeringly encyclopedic.
Isn't she really, just?
it amazes me every time. I'm like, I've never even heard of that movie.
It's my brain is filled with useless knowledge that will not get me anywhere in life, but I know crap like that. So, Ren, do you have another one?
Well, see, I was thinking about pairings that I've enjoyed through, you know, different genres. And one of the most sort of romantic, unrequited kinds of pairings that I've enjoyed over the years is in X-Men is Wolverine and Jean.
Oh.
And it came to my mind recently because I just started reading the new all-new X-Men series where Beast has brought back the original five from the past. So he's brought back Cyclops and Jean Grey, Iceman, Beast, and Angel back from the past to et cetera, et cetera. But they make a brief kind of appearance. You know, they come to the school for a moment and they're talking to somebody else and then they leave. And then, you know, they cut to Wolverine, who's now the headmaster, and he just kind of is dazed. And he says, it was really her. Because, of course, Jean's been dead for like 2 years. So he's sort of, you know, struck to his core to see that woman he's loved, you know, so many years. I can't say ever because he's really flipping old. You know, ever since they revealed that he's really flipping old, it's not ever.
He's been back
a
six
really
times.
Long time.
So is Wolverine.
And it's just it's so, you know, it's lovely. Because of the nature of the comic books, they can never, you know, they'll have them kind of get together and then not, and then back and forth and back and forth. But there's always, I think it's integral to his character to always be in love with her from afar, and I just like that.
Tasty angst.
Oh, angst.
Angst. Feed me. Feed me the angst. Jerem, what do you have?
Well, you guys keep talking, and I keep adding things to my list. I honestly love Thomas Harris's books, the Hannibal Lecter stuff, and I love the movies. But I think particularly in the books, the love affair, and that is what it is between Clarice and Hannibal, is astonishing. It's astonishing in its honesty. You know, she's in love with the idea of justice that her father was in his job as deputy, I believe. Mm-hmm. And she wants so hard, so much, like a golden retriever, to be the best FBI agent possible that's ever existed. And then they start to shit on her. Little by little, it gets worse and worse and worse. And then she comes into contact with Hannibal, who's the first person to say, wait a minute, the world's not quite like that. It's not just black and white. There's a lot of gray. And without giving away, you know, the film Hannibal doesn't cover everything from the book. But there's, well, you know what? I'll have to give it away. Never mind. It's a lovely love story. And just, you know, read it.
I really wish they had done what happened in the book, in the movie. I love the ending in the book. And it kills me inside.
If you go through the special features on the Ridley Scott disc, there are hints. There are bits and pieces. Not all of it. But you kind of see where she ends up that they didn't show you in the movie.
Oh, I do have that just set somewhere. I don't think I've ever watched the extras.
And life is really messy. And a lot of us identify Hannibal, even if we see him and we admire him, we still identify him as a monster. But life is more complicated than that.
Well, yeah, and then when you know, a lot of people give Hannibal Rising the short shaft, but I love the book and I enjoyed the movie, and you learn why he is the way he is. And I really, really love that relationship between the really, really good straight and narrow. And then you have this dark monster of Hannibal, who really isn't as much of a monster as he is. He's sort of evolved.
He's a man who found his way in the world.
Right.
It just happens to not be the way we all accept.
Exactly. But he persevered through all of this crap.
He does kill the people he eats, right?
Yeah, but typically they're assholes anyway.
No, they're killed at slaughterhouses, and he buys them. He buys them that way.
I just wanted to, you know.
The cleaner.
we're just defending the hell out of a guy who kills.
Well, that's the great thing about the relationship, is she is essentially the same type of person. She just she's gone to different extremes.
Yeah, they both are very driven, and they both have very high ideals that they hold on to. Both of them do. And Hannibal's, yes, and Hannibal's, you know, his edicts and his ideals are actually similar to hers in a lot of ways.
None of it would work without her being just as intense and watchable and readable as he is.
Right, right. And it's so great because they come from such different backgrounds. And it's like this perfect odd couple pairing. And in the books, it's even more deep and closer than I think in the films, for sure. But yeah, I agree. I love that relationship. Has its own little, its own following, and I wish he'd make another book, because I'd love to hear more of their story.
Well, you know, there's the TV series coming.
Yeah, but it's before her.
Yeah, which is why it probably fail.
Well, that, and you know, they already had that. What was it? Do No Harm show died after two episodes. Their ridiculous attempt to do two episodes trying to do Jekyll. Screw you, NBC. You can't do British TV without having the Brits in it.
I love The American Office, but why don't they just run the BBC series on American television, too?
Because then they wouldn't make as much money.
Ah, you're right.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, the only thing that I'm hoping NBC does correctly is the Dracula series, but that should work out because it's actually being done by people that did Downton Abbey, and it should be good. So
they've dug up Vlad Dracul and they've cloned him, and he's going to be good.
But I think we're about to run out of time, sadly. This sucks because I'm having fun with this. But Jerem, I want to give you some time to talk about what you're up to, because I know you've got like a lot of things going on.
Ah, okay. Well,
stop drinking the wine.
I put it down. I put it down. It's mostly empty anyway. No, it's not mine, but Darren Aronofsky's The Fountain.
Oh,
watch it. Watch it. Watch it. Okay. I'm currently working on a sci-fi drama action poly romance thing with a guy named Eric Adams. You can peep the first page at ericadams.net. I did an opening montage for a movie called Infinite Santa 8000, which should be amazing. from the same guys who did the drive-in horror show.
Yes, I
also have a piece in Occupy Comics, which, just Google it, Occupy Comics. Alan Moore has a piece in it, a 50-page piece in it, which is monumental. And then eventually, I'd say in the next 1 or 2 years, the companion piece to Behind the Mask, the movie, the comic, will be coming. And that, if things go according to plan, will be me.
Yay! That's awesome. So good job. You got a lot of crap going on. And you just had a baby, which is great. Say hi, baby. Say hi to the baby, Ren.
I don't
Hi,
want
baby.
To wake her. She's asleep. Be quiet.
Hi. Hi, baby.
She will wake up and I won't be in the bed until 3.
Great. Well, Jerem, thank you for being on tonight. This was so much fun. And I love giving people ideas of alternate way. You know, there's not just your typical rom-coms out there and that crap that's so cookie cutter. Love is not cut and dry like that. It's usually cut and bloody, and it's fun to see it that way. And take a moment to look at some different kinds of love stories, like say Demon Seed, or maybe even Legend, Labyrinth,
or Necromantic.
And then you have movies like Perfume that are even more effed up in the way that it's so pretty. But it's not always clean, and it's not always roses and puppies. It loves ugly and it's mean sometimes, and but still in every way.
And happy Valentine's Day! Holy crap, Jake! You depressed the hell out of everybody.
But no matter how you see it, love's gonna be beautiful to someone, and there you go. Happy Valentine's Day from Fangirl
Happy
Radio.
Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day.
Sorry. Happy Valentine's Day, everybody. We'll see you later. Bye.